Well, thanks for coming. I'm glad to see everybody that's here. And some of you have really gone to a great trouble to get here. Had to get up at before 5 to start milking cows, some of you. And some of you had to get up probably that early to drive up from Texas. We have a few from Texas. And we're thankful for everyone that's come on a Saturday morning, so early in the morning, to be here. And I think that bespeaks your interest in wanting to learn encourage others that want to learn as well. I'm thankful to have Brother Carl and Brother Joe with us this morning, and I'm thankful that they agreed to come and help us out and teach us a little bit of what they know. They're limited in how much they can teach us because of our time limit. But I remember Brother Joe, the very first time that I remember meeting Brother Joe was in, I think, 1976. He came to Boulder Drive in Dallas, Texas, and held a gospel meeting there, and that was the first time I ever met him. And Brother Carl, I think I met him about that same year at the Sulphur meeting, I believe it was. And when I first heard him speak, I thought to myself I was listening to John F. Kennedy reincarnated. And he's been a great, both of these are great gospel preachers. They know a lot, and they can tell us a lot. And we're going to have question and answer sessions. What we're basically going to do is we're going to conduct this like a worship service or like a church assembly. So it'll be kind of formal. And we'll ask if you would to, if you have drinks, if you have food, wait until the breaks. Don't eat and drink during the assembly. 1 Corinthians 11:22. And we'll ask the men to speak one at a time. We don't have any women here this morning. Anyway, we're going to ask Brother Joe to be our first speaker. He'll speak about 30 to 40 minutes, something like that. We don't have a trap door if he goes over. We're not going to zap him. And when he's finished speaking, we'll have questions for 10 to 15 minutes. Then we'll take a little break. And then we'll come back and after everybody's had time, get them a drink at the fountain or whatever and use the restroom. Then you come back and Brother Carl will speak second. And then we'll have another break, and I'll be the last speaker, and then we'll finish it up. We'll have question sessions following each speaker. And if things go well today, if we get good feedback, then we'll try to do this again next month. Now, Brother Carl and Brother Joe both have obligations next month, so they can't come. But we're going to think about doing this the last Saturday of each month, at least if it goes well. If it's a big old flop today, then we'll just forget it. We'll just lick our wounds and be finished today. But anyway, we're thankful for you coming, and we're going to have a teacher and preacher training. So everything that might fall under that category is fair game. So to begin, we'll have a prayer. To begin with, Brother Tom, would you lead us in a prayer?
I'd like to say to begin with, most of y'all probably know this already, but this is one of my very favorite topics or studies to enter into. The Church at Ada over the years has had great interest in training preachers and teachers, and we've had mixed luck with what we were able to accomplish, but that was something which we've worked at for over the years. Also, this is something which I see a crying need for, especially in our day and time. We need preachers. So I'm glad all you folks are here this morning, young men and older men, that you have a desire to learn how to teach or to preach the Lord's will. And it's my pleasure to be able to be here and give you some ideas about this. I noticed George said in the beginning here of the questions and all, render your opinion. Now that's all I'm going to do this morning on most of these things will be my opinion. And this is something which over the years I've found at least works for me, some of these things. And then trying to observe other people, and they teach and preach, like he said at the beginning of the questions. It is necessary that you and I be able to do this in a way that's effective, that we might teach someone else what to do to save their soul. So we're going to talk about it in that way, idea. And I might also say, I'm very opinionated, and I have my opinion. And you can do whatever you want to. If you want to do it the hard way, you just go right ahead. But I'm going to tell you the way I think that it works this morning, and that's what we're going to enter into. First of all, the ideas of Christianity and the Christian religion is a teaching religion. And I think that we all agree upon the idea that this is something, to some degree or another, all of us have obligations to teach. We can teach one of two ways. The Bible speaks about this in Acts 20, verse 20, that they talk publicly and from house to house. So we teach publicly and we teach privately. Now, our study this morning primarily deals with the idea of public teaching, and that's what we're going to be concerned about just for a little while. I want to tell you, men, that public teaching is a great responsibility. There's a whole lot resting on your shoulders when you stand up here in this pulpit and begin to teach. The responsibility is might be melted down sort of like this. You know, we have the purpose in teaching to save someone's soul, to help them see the right way and the right things. But there's also a danger if you bring about something which is contrary to the Lord's will, or you teach some idea that's also heard by your audience. And because you're the preacher a lot of times, everybody thinks, you know, this has to be right. He's the preacher after all. And that's what's wrong with our world as far as I'm concerned. People become willing to listen to what somebody else tells them. But I'm going to put it from the preacher's standpoint. You can help someone save their soul, and you can also mislead someone if you're not conscientious about what you teach. I find also, if you're going to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, you have to live it. I don't know of anything, and I can really get carried away on this, that's more detrimental to the Lord's house than preachers and teachers and Christians in general who profess Christianity, and yet they live worldly lives. That is a very difficult thing to overcome in a community, especially a small community, because everybody knows everybody and everything is going on. So if you want to preach and you want to get up here before the rest of us and tell us what to do, you need to be living the Christian life. I find for them, and this is one that I learned a long time ago, never ever get in the pulpit to teach unprepared. You have responsibility to edify, and we want to edify each other. The Bible teaches this idea in Ephesians 4, beginning verse 11, the need to edify the church. So you want to always be prepared, and I'll probably mention that again because I find that this is a very important idea. The preacher, he has a responsibility to prepare himself. You remember the Apostle Paul says in Hebrews 5 verse 12, for when for the time when you ought to be teachers, you have need to want to teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and become such as have need of milk and not strong meat, for strong meat belongs to those of full age. He is teaching these basic principles. First of all, the person who wants to preach, he has the desire to. You've got to desire to teach or desire to preach if you're going to do a job with it. We find further, Paul said, that these people that weren't prepared, they had to be taught again. You have to study if you want to preach. And then the last part he said in that reading, he says, by reason of use, we have to use what we learn. Now, all three of those are necessities. You know, I see brethren, especially young men, who want to teach. They desire to teach. They have a strong desire to teach. They don't want to study. They don't even want to go to church. They don't want to go to gospel meetings. This seems to be a new rental nowadays. I have young men tell me, I want to preach. Do you go to gospel meetings around? Do you hang out with preachers? Do you go somewhere where the gospel's being taught? Well, you know, I don't have much time for that. The basic answer is no, I don't do that. I don't know what we're thinking about. If we don't think that we have to not just desire, you have to make the preparation. You have to study and be ready for the things that are for sure going to come your way. This is something which just has to be. You have to study if you want to teach the Word of God. You have to reach the point where you have something that you can tell others. An old man told me a long time ago, I used to train bird dogs, and I'm still love to do that. He was explaining to me about training bird dogs. He said, you know, the first thing you got to do to teach a bird dog anything, you got to know more than the dog. And I find that is essential to teach. You got to know more than the dog does, or you can't help us in any way. So we have to prepare ourselves by study. Now, here again, and I'm doing this as a exactly as possible. Every man in the church was not intended to be a preacher. You know, we're nice in the Lord's house, and that's the way we're supposed to be. But I think we've made some poor judgments here with a man who, or a young man, especially who desires to teach so badly. He wants to teach. So he gets up here and he can't remember his name, and he fumbles around and goes through some effort to teach, and every one of us, you know, we hug him up and tell him what a great preacher he is. He can't even read. Now, maybe he'll get better. And I don't want to sound hard on that because I know of a couple of men who have improved themselves over the years. But I think there's a talent to teaching and a talent to preaching. And if you don't have the talent, no word about that. God doesn't expect you to do things that you cannot do. He doesn't ask of you anything that you're not able to do. You know, Matthew 25, when we talk about the parable of the talents, you notice the master gave to each one severally according to his ability. In other words, you use the things that you have according to your ability. So if you're not a teacher or you're not a preacher, you don't need to feel bad about that. There is a place for you. There's something you can do. I don't believe in all my years of preaching I've ever seen a one-talent Christian. Don't believe I ever have. Most of us have multiple uses and multiple talents, and you'll be accountable just for what you're capable of. Now, to add on to that right here, while it's easy, if you can teach or you can preach, you need to be doing that. That's going to be required of you in Judgment Day. If you can teach, and I mean do a good job of teaching and preaching, you need to be doing that. There are major problems which occur to public speakers. I'm not going to spend much time on this because you're probably aware of this. One of the problems is, and I read this in a book about Raccoon John Smith, said the first sermon that he ever preached, he got up in the pulpit, he looked at the crowd, his knees began to knock, he began to breathe in short gasps, and eventually he couldn't even say a word, and he noticed the door was open, so he just ran out the door. Now that's what you call stage fright. And all of us experience some of that to some degree. You may have some stage fright to begin with. And really, I tell people there's nothing wrong with stage fright at all. It probably keeps you on the cutting edge. You get so familiar with everything, you begin to do a sloppy job. So this idea of a little bit of anticipation or a little bit of nervous buildup is not bad if you learn to control it. And I'm going to tell you how just in a minute. People have more or less of this, the trembling legs and pounding hearts and short breath and memory loss and sweating, and any of these things can happen to you when you stand before a crowd, some worse than others. This happens to everybody. Athletes go through this. Musicians go through this. Deer hunters go through this. We call it buck fever. So you control yourself, and the best way that I know of is to be able to come under control of this, preparation. You want to study your lesson, get your lesson down so you can stand up here, and your mind may go blank, but you know what you want to say. You prepared yourself. You are ready, and that will overcome a whole lot of this anxieties that you might have. Think about your subject and think about your audience, and most of this you can control it. I find again, you don't need to be afraid. And I tell people this, I feel this myself very much. We are speaking to an audience of the Lord's people, and they're for you. They want you to do well. They want to learn something from your teaching. So keep that in mind. Secondly, we can also understand this, God's for us. He wants us to teach His Word and do well. So we find that there's two ideas that ought to help you to overcome this stage fright. Getting a little bit further, and I don't know how much of this to cover exactly, but people ask me on a regular basis about accumulating a sermon or getting a sermon together. There's a whole lot to be said about that. One of the best things I think you can do is begin to accumulate material for sermons. Like if you think of something that you think might ought to be taught, get you a little notebook and write it down. Later on, you'll find out you can add other things to it. You hear a good illustration, write it down. It'll be useful for you, maybe perhaps later on. We can find ideas in the newspaper. We can find this in Bible study. That's one of the best ways. Sermons that others preach. You know, we have so many preachers nowadays who never hear anybody but themselves. Now, you'll never learn anything new listening to yourself. It doesn't work that way. We have to have the opportunity to be exposed to others' teachings, books. And people ask me about sermon outline books. I may say more about this in a minute. Sermon outline books were the atomic bomb to me when I first started. I didn't know there was any such thing. And I was trying to grapple around, coming up with a sermon now and then. Johnny Elmore, who was my mentor, I guess we could say, one day he came around and he handed me a book. And it was a sermon outline book by G.C. Kaufman. I could not believe it. I'd asked him before, where do you get your sermons? Well, you know, you just get it. He was holding that out on me. Here was a sermon outline book. Now, I like brief outlines. All I want is an idea, you see. And that's one of the places to get it. And I tell people about this. If you have not a clue about teaching, get you a good sermon outline book and look through it. You'll find out what other men have done. And it might point you in the right direction. So, between me and Mr. Kaufman, we got a running start then. And it was a great help as far as I'm concerned. Now, there's all kinds of sermons. You can study a particular subject. You can study a certain chapter. You can study a certain word. All of these are good ways to begin. I want to get to this, though, before we wind this up. I am a great believer when you organize your sermon material to put it in outline. I haven't got anything yet more important, I think, than this. Do not write out your sermon completely. Do not do that. There are many reasons you don't want to do that. The main one is, when you write that out completely, you're bound to it. If you think of something you think needs to be added, you can't add it, because it's not in your text. And like I say, now this is my opinion. An outline is a very useful tool for a public speaker. It helps him to organize and arrange his speech in the way he wants it to be. And then stay with your outline. Now, like I say, it helps you to outline or organize your thoughts. It keeps you on the subject, and it tells you when you're done. We have a thing in the church that I just despise. You know, I have preachers that preach for, they have a real strong, good 15-minute sermon. And then they look at the clock. Oh, it's just 15 minutes gone by. I can't quit in 15 minutes. They want to stretch it out to 30 or 45, so they rehash it. Now you've got a 15-minute sermon that's warmed up, and you're running it by again, and you've messed the whole mess up. With an outline, you can run your finger down the page, and when you get to the bottom of the page, quit. It doesn't make any difference if it's 15 minutes. You know, I use this illustration sometimes. Most of us remember this when we first started. You may think you have the finest 40-minute sermon since Paul's speech on Mars Hill. This is the greatest sermon there ever was. You get up, and 7.5 minutes later, you're through. Well, quit. Quit then, because you probably have a good 7.5 minute sermon. That's probably what you have. And when you try to go through it again, you're making a tragic mistake. A sermon outline keeps you from, or allows you to be flexible and spontaneous. It keeps you in touch with the audience. You know, who knows if the audience you're preaching to has anything to do with the text that you've written out. Hopefully it does, or else you and them both are going to be left out in the cold. It gives you freedom, your notes do. To begin with, beginners, you can make you a pretty exhaustive outline if you want to, but gradually narrow that thing down to where you've got just your major points, your minor points, your sub-points, and move along like that. The outline contains supporting material, an introduction, body, and a closing. And that's the way that you go at this idea. Again, this is my opinion about this. read each scripture that you read, learn what the context is. This is where you validate your points. You make a point, you offer a verse of scripture. Be sure that the context of the scripture that you're offering applies to whatever you're teaching, if possible. Now, I know that's not always possible. You know, there's a few verses we all use that have a context different from what we want to use it to. But you can learn to use, or you can learn what the context is. Also, I find a place right here for illustrations and examples. This is something which focuses the attention of the audience. You know, a good illustration is, they've been described as a window to the mind. It's easier for us to think about something if we can hear it illustrated. This also has to do with the idea of writing on the board. Or, you know, I wrote these three words up here. To me, these three words now, you've seen them, you know what we're talking about. You want to see them again, there they are again. A visual aid is a great thing as far as I'm concerned, because it helps keep this before you. And here again, here's one of my little peeves. There is no place in gospel preaching for cutesy. A preacher can be a clown if he's not careful. And when you do that, you lose your credibility. There is no place for personal bragging. You know, your deeds and what your family does. And there's no place for that in preaching. There's no point in that. Poor use of the English language. You know what you do when you stand up here, and I have things that I'm guilty of in my speech, and I know that, but I try to remember and work on it. But when you stand up here and your sermon is laced with double negatives and ain'ts, and all, you know what everybody thinks? He's stupid. You know, anybody that uses ain't nowadays is stupid. He doesn't even know how to speak. So why should I believe anything he says? The days, and I'm generous about this too, the days of country bumpkin preachers in the Lord's church are over. You have to speak and use good grammar. Do not be guilty of using silly or gross words. Do not try to be a comedian. Now here again, I am a great believer that humor can be a great thing. If you use humor in the right way, it is something which again, it keeps your audience focused. They are waiting for you to teach them something, and this sort of keys them all in. So a little humor along the right time in the right place is great. In your introduction, you can start off right, and you can gain the audience's attention. You can do this in a lot of ways. You can refer to an occasion. You can use a verse of scripture, ask a question, tell your purpose, quote a familiar saying. A lot of ways to begin. But the idea with the introduction to your lesson is get their attention. You want to get their attention to begin with. Sometimes a real good pertinent question is good enough for a beginning. Be willing to use the beginning to focus their attention. I heard a long time ago, here's the way that you're supposed to preach. Tell the audience what you're going to tell them. That's the introduction. The body, tell them what you're going to tell them. That's the body. And the end, tell them what you told them. And that's really pretty good. You stand up here and you tell them that we're going to talk about this morning, and you talk about it. And in the end, that doesn't mean you rehash your sermon, but you can summarize it and draw it all back together. So there's a lot of ways you can own all that, and experience is where you get to learn how to use all that ideas. And that's this part down here. You have to use it. I want to get on to this, though. The delivery of the sermon, I think, is really important. There are basic skills that a preacher has that will help them to be more effective. These basic skills, they grow with experience. And I can tell you, and most of y'all are, I know you're experienced to some degree in teaching. We have some young men here, though, today. Nothing will serve you any better over the long haul than some experience. You learn how to establish a connection with the audience. You learn what the audience is, what affects them, and what is good and what's not so good. There's about three ways I think about. Visibly, what does your audience see? the visible part, the actions of the speech of the preacher are important. Secondly, audibly, what's your audience hearing? This again is a contact with the audience. Psychologically, and I'm a great believer here, this is what the audience perceives. This is what he's the result of his seeing and hearing, and he perceives. This is a big deal. You want him to perceive what he needs to perceive. Y'all, I think, would all agree with me. You know, there's some preachers can stand up here and teach something and makes everybody mad. They're mad. Another preacher can get up here and say the exact same thing, and it's fine. Now, you know what the difference is there? It's perception of the audience. One preacher came over with the perception, for instance, he loves your soul. He wants your soul to be saved. And if that comes across to people, you know what I've discovered over the years? If you show a genuine concern for souls, you can tell them anything you want to. Because you're concerned about them. Now, if you get up here and try to tell them what they're going to have to do, you lose it. You know, you can't make anybody do anything. You know that. That's a sad awakening to some people. You cannot make anybody do anything they don't want to. So you can get up here and go and carry on and do all these sort of things, but unless you do it with a perception of concern for their soul, you're not doing any good. The visual perception, I'm going to talk about each one of these just a little bit, and I believe in this too. When it comes to your time to get up to speak, be eager about it. You know, you see guys that get up here like it's their best friend just died, and they're starting to try to teach. You're eager. You know why you're eager? Because you're preaching the greatest story in the world. You're telling about the good news of Jesus Christ. Why wouldn't that make you eager? Why doesn't that make you enthusiastic? You know, I've been doing this, as I said, a long time. You know, I'm still enthusiastic about the fact that you and I are preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Why wouldn't that make a person eager and enthusiastic? You give the audience a feeling of confidence. Look at him. You know, he's loaded up to the gills with something good for us to know. He wants to tell us. He's up there ready to do this. Stand up straight. Do not lay down on the speaker stand. Slouch or slump around. Don't grasp the stand, you know, as though it might run away. It's not going anywhere. You know what this stand is for? To hold your books. That's all. Not to lay down on, or not to in any way use for a crutch. The stand is something which is basically to hold your notes. You learn to stand behind it in a relaxed way. Do not pace. Now, I'm pretty bad to pace. I try not to pace, though. I like to walk over here. Now, I have a reason for this. This is not just something. You know what this does? This makes you available. I can stand back there. I'm not available. We got a barrier. But I walk out here and I've got I'm available. What I'm teaching you, you see, is a concern for you. You can do, and an auctioneer taught me this. You can do this. You know what this is? This is a sign for an answer. It is a sign for action. What do we want? We want you to obey the gospel. We want you to obey the gospel. You see what we're talking about? This is something which I think you learn, but it is something you don't want to pace. You know, you've seen people just like that. That's pacing. That's a distraction. Eye contact, the speaker keeps his eye, looks at the audience. Good eye contact with the audience serves many different purposes. First of all, it allows the listener to know that you're personally including him in the message. I think this is really, really important. You got to learn to look at your audience. You'll be surprised what you learn just looking at the audience. You look at the audience, you know, you can see some that are totally tuned out. You know they're not paying any attention. You look at another and you see that they're interested. Sometimes when you have visitors in the audience, if you see a visitor and he's struggling to write down a verse maybe he missed, say it again. How did you know to do that? You saw him. He was having a hard time finding the verse. So you say it again to him. You're looking at the audience. And you know, I can look out there and I can look at you personally from time to time and you think, this is to me. This is for me. You learn to do that unconsciously. That's something that it is for you. And this is something which we want you to understand. It also allows the speaker to gauge the reaction of the audience. I've seen people that I knew were almost persuaded. I've seen that. I've seen people that were convicted, if you don't mind the use of that term. They're convicted of their sinness. Now what are you going to do? Here we got one that's almost persuaded. He's convicted. You just wind up and go on your merry way? No. You have a chance, you see, to maybe stress something else that you think might do something for his benefit. The last one of this, if you look at the audience, it makes you believable. What do we think about a person who won't look in your eyes? That guy's sneaky. He's sneaky. That guy's a crook. He's a shyster. He won't even look at you. Well, what if a preacher's up here and he won't look at you either? Maybe he's sneaky too. It gives you credibility if you look at the audience because it shows you believe what you're saying and you're asking them to believe what you're saying. So it is a very valuable thing. Do not look at the ceiling. I'm amazed some of our old preachers, you know, after 40 years are still looking at the back wall. Or do not look at the blackboard and speak to it. You know, you're dead in the water when you turn around here and keep talking. If anything, turn sideways and talk to the audience. Don't do that. Do not look at the floor. Do not continually move your head back and forth like you're mowing grass. There's a few folks that I know, they've been taught, you know, you need to look at your audience for their tennis match. You don't want to do that. You do this naturally. It's like I heard a preacher preach one time. He was preaching somebody else's sermon. And evidently he just copied it right out of the book. And he got to a certain place in the sermon and says, make a motion with your right hand. That was what was in the sermon. It was the cues that this other guy had as to when to make his move. Now, well, I'm not talking about that. We're not talking about something mechanical or something like that. It needs to be a natural thing. Facial expression. You know, a smile and a frown tell a story. And you need to be conscious of that. People who use correct facial expressions, they can tell a whole lot by the way that they're looking and how they feel about whatever it is that they're discussing. George, I can quit any time.
Go 5 more minutes.
Facial expressions can be a distraction in your sermon. You know, people, they use facial distortions when pronouncing words. They use lip smacking through their teeth. They blink their eyes like a toad in a hailstorm. All of these are distracting to what you're having to say. So you try not to do that. Gestures that we use with our arms and our head, they emphasize our speaking, the purpose for our speaking. I want to get on here to audible connection. Avoid a monotone. Don't stand up here and grind on and on and on and on at the same rate of speed, at the same pitch. Use a different pitch, and you can express a lot of things in a different pitch. Suppose you're going to say, you want a prize. You want a prize. You want a prize. You see how that can make a difference? And if you're excited about the gospel, you can use that effectively. The psychological connection I want to talk about just a tad. Be sincere. Let the audience know that you're sincere. Earnest. Honest. You believe what you're saying. You've got some enthusiasm. You know what the word enthusiasm originally meant. And theos. God-possessed. Enthusiasm. These are all good as far as the way that you deliver your sermon. Let me see what's left. I'm just about done. Be positive about what you say. Don't leave any doubts. You know, when a preacher stands up here and he says something that leaves a doubt in the audience's mind, he's probably done as much harm as he has good. Be forceful about what you preach. The fact is that you believe it. George gave Carl and I some suggestions. I didn't even prepare for all of them. He asked, in your opinion, what makes a good sermon? Give an example of a modern day preacher. Well, the preacher I'd like to use is not modern day. It's the Apostle Paul in Timothy 4, verse 2. He says, encourage the young preacher, that this is something which they reprove, rebuke, and exhort. That's what makes a good sermon. And you use whatever they need to reprove, rebuke, and exhort. I find further, the next one is also, I like this one. In your opinion, experience about changing sermons when a visitor shows up. I was going to preach on the air question, but a visitor from the Diversity Church comes. What should I do? Well, here's my feeling about that. And I'm talking to gospel preachers now. Preach what the people need to hear. And it grabs me sometimes to hear a preacher get up when you got a house full of visitors and frail the church. That's not the place for that. You don't do that there. Here's people that are never going to hear the gospel again, maybe. And you're going to get up there and tell them about some aspect of the Christian life. I think that's a sad mistake. Myself, when I go to a gospel meeting, I never have my sermon necessarily picked out. I've got two or three in mind to deal with various situations, but I assure you, if there's somebody there, if I have at all possible aware of it, what they need to hear, that's what I'll teach. Whatever they need to hear. I think about Paul again in Acts 24, verse 24. You know, Paul went into Felix, and he reasoned with them about righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come. Now, Paul would have been like some folks nowadays. He'd went in there and patted Felix on the back and told him what a good ruler he was and how he did a lot for the community. And Felix would have went out of there not realizing that he was unrighteous, intemperate, and in danger of judgment. Paul told him what he needed to hear. And it scared him to death. And I like to scare folks to death with the gospel. So you tell them what they need to hear. I believe that's about it. I may have another thing or two, but I'll quit. Sorry, I did run over probably, George. I don't know sure when we started.